This is music from a wonderful Louisville bass band called My Morning Jacket with Cobra as we ease into this week's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, streaming live, typically on the internet, kuci.org. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rousing rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. And Serena has been kind enough to agree to fill in for me next week when I'll be out of town, meaning you get a special two-hour edition of the Serena Sharp Show. Yay! But here at Talking Animals, meanwhile, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, through comedy, and other means. And it's been a little over 2 months since we launched Talking Animals, and we've been already extremely fortunate to have a string of terrific guests. Recently, that's included conversation with and music from Kirk Olson, a gifted singer-songwriter who's released a CD of 12 canine-centric tunes called Dog Songs. An interview with Sunny Benedict, a remarkable woman who founded the Baja Animal Sanctuary just over the Mexican border near Rosarito Beach. We also spoke with Tawny Lee Thompson, a vet tech affiliated with the Red Cross, who teaches classes in pet first aid and CPR. Last week, we featured an interview with Dr. Sophia Yin, a Davis-based veterinarian, researcher, and author, discussing her pioneering research on dog barks and what they mean. So clearly here at Talking Animals, we're trying to hit a broad array of guests, a varied mix spanning all regions of the animal world. And continuing in that vein, we're delighted today to bring you a conversation with actor-comedian Kevin Nealon, the former star of Saturday Night Live, who's a longtime champion of animals and animal rights, and, perhaps not coincidentally, also a longtime vegetarian. So we'll get into all this and more when we speak with Kevin in a few minutes from now. Meanwhile, on Talking Animals, it's time for a weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I'll remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss, announcements, observations, and of course any comments you have about past shows here on Talking Animals, stories you might have spotted, anything. It's all welcome here at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So, turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically these are local, regional, national, or in some cases international animal stories of note that seem important to discuss. And with any luck to get your comments on, I will also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to mark on your calendar if you haven't already done so. Also, if there are ever news stories or announcements you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@aol.com. I'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@aol.com. And we're closing in on, by the way, a Talking Animals website, which of course, we'll have archives of the show, but also other kinds of information and pictures and links and cool tidbits. So won't be long now before we indeed launch the Talking Animals website. But meanwhile, as for animal news and such, let's talk turkey, as it were. I want to first start off, as I do almost every show, briefly at least, hitting the subject of Tiger Rescue. This is a facility in Colton that's been in the news off and on for the last several months. And basically, it's a facility. It was trying to be labeled as a sanctuary. But anyway, it's a facility that had a few dozen tigers and other big cats, as well as some other animals. And the proprietor let the facility go quite neglected, and more to the point, let the animals go quite neglected. So he's currently up on criminal charges of various kinds. But meanwhile, the animals are there because legally and otherwise they've been prohibited from moving, most of them, till very recently. Some have just moved, thankfully. But meanwhile, the animals are there and still need care. And there's an amazing man named Chuck Tracy who has stepped in from his facility down in Ramona, California, called the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, to oversee the day-to-day operation of Tiger Rescue in this kind of odd transitional time. And but he's doing it strictly with a kind of rotating battalion of volunteers who go out to Colton, where Tiger Rescue is, and help these animals, clean the enclosures, water them down. You know, obviously it's hot these days, and having been out there a few times myself, I can say a few things as fun on some level as spraying down tigers who love water. I mean, it's like they're really playful. It's like kittens who actually would like water. And there's feeding and other things, sometimes work on some of the enclosures. So it's really, really gratifying work, and these animals have really come a long way from where they were since Chuck took over. And eventually, the hope is that they will be, you know, the rest of them will be relocated. About a handful, a dozen or so, I think, have been relocated in the last few weeks. But, you know, the idea, of course, is there has to be room for them. And there's a lot of sanctuaries, real sanctuaries, that have been contacted. And some have the space, but not the enclosures. Some are just tapped out. So it's a long process. But if you could carve out any time to go out and help out these tigers and other cats that are there, and some other really cool animals, too, domestic and others, it's, again, it's a great, great day. It's a great way to spend some time. It's a cool volunteer effort. So email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I will hook you up with the people that are kind of coordinating that. On a related note, I want to also mention a event coming up, actually hosted by former LA Mayor Richard Reardon and his wife, and the Fund for Animals, which operates the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in Ramona that I mentioned, and is at least indirectly involved with this temporary operation of Tiger Rescue. Anyways, they're holding a Save the Tigers party. It's basically a fundraiser so that, again, the tigers that are still at Tiger Rescue can be moved to good homes. And some of these sanctuaries across the country that have been contacted that are, you know, licensed and equipped to handle big cats have said they're willing to do so, but in many cases they don't have the enclosures. So a lot of the monies that would be raised from this fundraiser on Saturday, September 20th, would enable then those enclosures to be built at those sanctuaries, and then more and more of the tigers to be moved from Tiger Rescue. So the evening is going to involve cocktails, hors d'oeuvres, a silent auction, and again, it's all to benefit the emergency placement of the rescue tigers who need good homes. So feel free to contact us again, talkinganimals@AOL.com, for more details on that. A little less close to home, but notable in a lot of ways as well, just for the issue, if not the actual conference, is, one sec, I'm going to put a little more music under our voice here. So, but anyways, this is actually something that's taking place in October, number one, and in Philadelphia, number two. And again, ordinarily, there are people who, various places who listen on the internet, including other states. So this would be pertinent to them as well. But this is a No More Homeless Pets conference. And this would be a gathering of people who are trying to create a new world for homeless pets. And they gather in the Philadelphia area as part of this growing national movement. This is the sixth annual No More Homeless Pets Conference, and it's sponsored by Best Friends Animal Society, which is an offshoot of Best Friends Animal Sanctuary, or actually the renamed version of that. And it's going to be Friday, October 24th through Sunday, October 26th at the Radisson Valley Forge in Philadelphia. But even if you can't go, just the issue itself is quite important if you care at all about animals. And in fact, there's a quote here from the president of Best Friends Animal Society saying there's a growing movement across the country to bring an end to the killing of homeless pets. Said Michael Mountain, president of Best Friends Animal Society. About 17 million cats and dogs were euthanized nationally in 1987. Now that number is down to about 4.4 million. I believe it's realistic to say every pet will eventually be in a loving home in the next decade. So whether or not you can attend this conference, to find out more about that movement and what you might do to get involved, you can contact Dee Bayless at 435-644-2001, extension 129, or simply email NMHP, as in No More Homeless Pets, at bestfriends.org. A story I meant to get to a week or so ago that caught my eye in New York is sort of tied to Bryant Park there, which is right behind the big landmark New York Public Library. And they had decided to have trained hawks employed there to keep pigeons from making a mess on visitors in Bryant Park. Okay, but the problem with that was that one of the birds mistook a chihuahua as its lunch. It swooped down and took the chihuahua. So they have suspended that practice, at least temporarily. And, Kim, as with all these things, love to hear your thoughts, comments on any of this or other animal-related issues. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Back to closer to home again. Over the weekend, saw this in the Los Angeles Times. Headlined, OC Vet Targeted for Being a Hunter. It starts on the website devoted to his animal insurance business and a nonprofit foundation he created to celebrate the healing power of pets. Prominent Orange County veterinarian Jack L. Stevens proclaims his love for non-humankind. Very simply, the owner of 9 dogs and 2 cats writes on an online resume, I founded a pet insurance company to see the pets get the best of care and not have to be put to sleep. Discouraged by the prevalence of economic euthanasia, Stevens decided to do as much as he could to help as many pets as possible, the resume says. Okay, but here's where it gets interesting. The story goes on, all of which would seem to make him an unlikely target for the wrath of people for the ethical treatment of animals. Powerful animal rights organization, of course, known as more simply as PETA. The problem, PETA charges, is that Stevens is also an avid hunter and frequent participant in African safaris on which he bags big game trophy animals whose heads end up on his wall. A spokesman for Brea-based Veterinary Pet Insurance Incorporated, the company Stevens founded and leads, said Stevens makes no secret of his pastime. Quote, it's certainly not something he's ever tried to hide, David Reisman says. Tons of people in the industry have known, and he's never made any bones about the fact that he hunts. Stevens, the spokesman said, was out of town and unable for comment. Reisman could not say whether the veterinarian, who no longer has a practice and concentrates instead on VPI, one of the nation's oldest and largest pet insurance firms, was on a safari. If he were, however, it's possible that it was organized by Grassland Safaris, which sponsors frequent hunting trips to South Africa and lists Stevens as a reference on its website. We, quote, we have some excellent shooting and hunting, a spokesman assures potential customers browsing the internet. I've had numerous American hunters over the past 7 years, and we've gotten along very well. So, don't know if you have any comments on that. A veterinarian with all kinds of information on his website about the humane treatment of animals and trying to discourage euthanasia, etc. May in fact be a regular hunter, big game hunter in Africa. And lastly, I guess for today's animal news and this morning's LA Times, in fact, in an article headlined "Foie Gras Flap Leads to Vandalism and Incidents." Say that 3 times fast. I'm having trouble 1 time slow. But anyways, it's a Dateline Sonoma, California. A gastronomic war has erupted in the sleepy wine country city over foie gras, a staple of haute cuisine that some see as a delicacy and others consider a symbol of animal cruelty. Over the last month, animal rights advocates who object to the methods used to produce foie gras, the fat and liver of a force-fed duck or goose, have vandalized 2 homes, including one owned by well-known San Francisco chef Laurent Manrique, and have caused a flood in a 19th-century adobe building, the oldest commercial structure in Sonoma. The incidents are being investigated by law enforcement officials in Sonoma, Marin, and Napa counties, and by the FBI. At issue is Sonoma Savoie's yet-to-open bistro in the Adobe Building that plans to offer, among many other items, foie gras, French, for fat liver. Critics, including the American Humane Society, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and underground organizations such as Animal Liberation Front, say producing foie gras involves, quote, animal torture. And goes on. It's quite a lengthy story, and we're not going to get into all of it, of course, but basically, at least there's a quote from a spokesperson for PETA saying, you know, in responding to one of the chefs, saying, but ducks are not an endangered species, and there's nothing that we do to them that is inhumane. Not so, contends Sam Aiken, a researcher with the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, who says foie gras production is inherently inhumane. Quote, as an organization, we are against the use of animals for food altogether, but foie gras is particularly egregious, he said. Someone grabs a duck, sticks a long metal tube down its throat, and forces food into its stomach 3 to 4 times a day just to make its liver 12 times its normal size. The poor animals are tortured to produce an unneeded delicacy. So, again, a fairly hot controversy, a hot topic, as Serena Sharp might say. So, again, love to get your thoughts on that. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And again, any other comments on any other matters that have caught your eye in the animal world, pick up the phone. Don't be shy. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. Meanwhile, let's, while we're waiting for those calls to pour in, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner with a vintage piece of animal-oriented stand-up comedy from Stiller and Mira. If you're old enough, you know that Stiller and Mira were a popular and acclaimed comedy team in the 60s. If you're younger, then you might be inclined to know them more as the parents of actor-director Ben Stiller, or to recognize Jerry Stiller from the sitcom King of Queens, where he plays Carrie's and father and the sometimes nemesis of Douglas there on the show. But this piece is from the good old days of Stiller and Mira, and it's called The Whale on 88.9 FM, KUCI.
We'd like to bring you what we consider a newsworthy item at this time. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Pauline Cedric, LBC News, speaking to you live from Laguna Beach, California. We are here on the beach at Laguna, where we are witnessing one of the greatest human interest stories of all time. Only 6 hours ago, this man, this human being, was found here on the beach in a state of complete exhaustion. He had been entombed alive for 24 hours in the abdominal cavity of a giant whale. This hero of the moment, may I say, the successor to Major Cooper in the eyes of his countrymen, has allowed us to interview him. He has, incidentally, been given bouillon by the Red Cross and a dry towel. Good evening, sir. This is Pauline Cedric, NBC News, speaking to you with all America watching. Just tell us in your own words, sir, how the horrible tragedy occurred.
Well, first of all, I came here to California 2 weeks ago to see my daughter.
I see. You are not a native Californian, sir.
I'm from New York. My daughter's from California. She lives here with this fella. Her husband.
Marvelous.
They have a house.
Excuse me, sir. Is this your only child?
This is my daughter.
Ladies and gentlemen, this man, this father, traveled over 3,000 miles to see his only child, little realizing that tragedy lurked ahead. Go on with your story, sir.
Well, they have a house.
Yes.
Up on the Palisades.
Yes.
You can see it from here.
Yes, I see.
A split level.
Wonderful.
From the...
Get to the point where the horrible tragedy occurred, sir.
Well, on the day it happened, I was in the water.
Mm-hmm.
I went in for a duck.
You were duck shooting, sir?
I took a duck in the water.
Oh, you took your pet duck in the water, I think.
I went in the water for a duck.
Do you mean you were fishing for a duck?
When you go in the water, you go for a duck in the water. A dip.
A dip. I see a dip. For the benefit of our Midwest audience, duck and dip are phenomenal. You took your duck, dip.
I was in the water.
Yes.
My daughter hollered up from the house, come up for lunch. Then she disappeared.
Well, actually, we know now, sir, that eventful moment, it was you who disappeared and not your daughter. Would you tell our viewing audience, when did you realize it was you who disappeared and not your daughter?
When she didn't holler help. Then I knew it was me who disappeared. It wasn't my daughter.
Yes, of course. Excuse my rudeness, sir. I should have asked you this much sooner, but what is your name?
Jonah.
Strange, ironic twist that this man sitting before us should bear the same name as one who long ago endured a similar fate. Go right ahead, Mr. Jonah.
Somebody else this happened to here before me?
No, a long time ago, sir.
This is some place, this California.
Quite a while ago.
If it happened before, it'll happen again.
I don't think you understand, sir.
They should rope it off.
Well, I'm sure they should.
You don't leave a place like this open.
All right, Mr. Jonah, please, we're on camera.
New York, you don't have this.
This is California, sir. Let's discuss the whale. The whale, sir. Now, at what rate of speed were you traveling during this incident?
Well, you're not a whale.
Yes.
You don't know how fast you're going. It's not like you're on a fluke, or a flounder, or a pike. There's no vobble, no yaw.
No yaw, uh-huh.
He goes by knots, he don't go by miles.
Wonderful. Could you describe for us, specifically now, the interior of the whale?
Blubber. Wall to wall.
Mr. Jonah, you were there several hours, Mr. Jonah. Now, how actually did you spend your time in this hiatus?
It was in a whale.
No.
We didn't go near hyenas.
It's my fault. I'll rephrase the question. What I meant was the awful moment, the moment of terror and truth, when those mammoth jaws snapped behind you. What did you do then?
I sat down.
You sat down?
Yeah, the waiter said, sit down.
The waiter?
The waiter, the maitre d', looked like a waiter. Said, sit down, I'll bring you a menu. I looked at the menu. I ordered seafood.
You ordered seafood?
You're in a whale, you're not going to order chicken or meat.
No, I know that.
Then the manager came over, said, I'm sorry, you need a jacket.
A jacket?
That's what I said, a jacket. Where am I at the Ritz?
Mr. Jonah, ladies and gentlemen, has suffered a tremendous emotional shock.
The food was good.
Of course that food was good. We all know what you went through, Mr. Jonah, and we respect you. Not only that, we have a surprise for you. Just before we went on the air, Mr. Ed Sullivan called. He wants you to appear on his program. Also, you have been voted the Man of the Year by the Laguna Beach Junior Chamber of Commerce.
This is too much.
Yes. Well, we have a few seconds left, sir. What are your plans for the future?
Well, first of all, I want to thank all these people for making this possible. This is very nice. But you should understand one thing. I'm a simple man, you see. I'm retired. All this excitement, it's too much. I think it's best I take it easy. Stay out here with a friend. I've known him for years. On his boat. He made it himself.
Wonderful. You'll have a very relaxing trip.
It'll be a little crowded.
Crowded?
Yeah, he has his sons, his wives, his sons' wives, the animals, two cats, two giraffes.
Thank you very much. This is Pauline Cedric signing off from Laguna Beach, California.
You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM and streaming live, normally, on the internet at www.kuci.org. I'm Duncan Strauss, and that was Stiller and Mira with The Whale, taken from their collection entitled Presenting America's New Comedy Sensations. Comedy Corner is a weekly feature of Talking Animals, perhaps, if we're not overreaching here, a signature feature of Talking Animals. If you have a suggestion of an animal-oriented piece of comedy you think we should feature on the Comedy Corner, please email us at talkinganimals@aol.com. But now we want to move into to our guest, our interview. Earlier in the show, I had mentioned a bit about this week's guest, Kevin Nealon, an actor and comedian who was a longtime cast member on Saturday Night Live. In fact, holds the record, or at least ties the record, I believe, for the longest stint on the show. He's since appeared in a number of TV series and specials and, of course, a number of films, including most recently Anger Management with Jack Nicholson and Adam Sandler, and Daddy Daycare with Eddie Murphy. He also appears in the soon-to-be-released Good Boy with Molly Shannon, among others. But today, here on Talking Animals, Nealon is here, fittingly enough, to talk about animals, animal rights, being a vegetarian, and other such topics. So here, in a conversation recorded a few days ago, is Kevin Nealon on Talking Animals on KUCI. Okay, let's welcome now to Talking Animals, Kevin Nealon. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks so much for joining us here. And I guess while our listeners, of course, would really no doubt first think of you from your long, wonderful stint on Saturday Night Live, 86, I guess, through 95, I want to say.
That's right.
And more recent films, Anger Management, Daddy Daycare, and the cool documentary Comedian. You've also really been recognized as a longtime champion of animals and identified with various animal causes, and that's obviously what we're hoping to talk more about today. So maybe we could take a minute and just kind of get into the history. Like, how early did you become an animal lover or advocate?
Well, I got involved probably back in around 1990. Mm-hmm. And there was a court case in Las Vegas concerning the Barasini orangutans trial against PETA.
Okay.
And PETA asked me if I would come in and help give support, and so I did that. And then I became more and more aware of the plight of animals and animal rights and homeless animals, and became more aware and educated about it and got more and more involved.
Well, cool, and I definitely want to get into more of that, but just going back a little bit, did you grow up with animals? I mean, were you always kind of an animal lover, or?
I've always loved animals. Mm-hmm. I had a dog growing up when I was a kid, you know, and his name was Caesar, and he lived to be 17 years old, and he added so much to my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dogs are so much fun, and they're also work, too, so, you know, unless you're ready to do the work, you really shouldn't get a dog, you know?
Right.
And, you know, it means getting up in the morning early, and if you live on the East Coast, you've got to get up and it's cold out and it's snowing, and you got to walk them, you know. And,
sure.
And, you know, just make sure that they have a good life.
Can't take the commitment lightly, really.
Right.
And so did you kind of with Caesar and then the cool relationship you had with Caesar, I mean, you obviously sort of just had a cool bond and connection with animals, but was there also something that just either a specific incident or just cumulatively did you kind of develop the concern to the extent where, you know, for example, the case you decided where PETA would say, hey, Kevin Nealon, can you help us or get some attention focus on this? Was that just sort of a gradual thing or did something really kind of, you know, happen that really sort of set you on that path?
I really don't know what it is in people where, you know, they become proactive for a certain cause. You know, sometimes they're affected by something that's personal in their life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I've always loved animals. You know, I've always had a place in my heart for them. And you know, it just became more and more so the more I learned about, you know, different situations.
Sure.
And you know, like I said before, I became more educated and aware of what's going on. You know, a lot of us don't realize what goes into making a hamburger, you know,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, veal or things like that. And we just kind of, a lot of people just don't want to know. They're ignorant to it, you know.
They sure.
know that's what they've been brought up with, and it's been a tradition to eat, you know, that. And I think if they went out and they looked at some of the slaughterhouses and, you know, saw all the antibiotics that were pumped in and the hormones that were pumped into these cattle, they would stay away.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the cruelty of it all.
Right. Well, it's as you're suggesting. I mean, it's awareness or lack thereof, and in some cases, people are you know, for one reason or another, comfortable sort of staying kind of unaware.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't realize all the alternatives out there, you know, as far as meat substitute products. I mean, it's amazing how far They've come in the last 10 years with getting the texture and the seasoning, and that's really what it's all about, too. It's
sure.
The texture and the seasoning of the food.
Well, one of the things I was, you know, gonna, maybe we'll just even jump into that now, because in terms of your sort of vegetarianism, I mean, it's, for some people that's kind of a private matter, personal issue, but I happen to know you're more than willing to discuss your own experiences with that. So maybe just kind of your evolution in that way, since you already started to touch on the fact that, you know, there's, you know, a whole, you know, fairly cool and satisfying world out there for, again, people who just you know, explore it. When did you first start thinking about becoming a vegetarian, and how did that kind of progress from there?
It's probably back in 86 when I got married,
mm-hmm.
and my wife was interested in it, and we both kind of, you know, she was a little more along than I was, and then I became more interested in it, and and it was contagious, you know, and I got to see that you can get a lot of protein out there. A lot of people ask, where do you get your protein? You know, it's a very common question, and like any diet, you know, you get it from the protein sources and food. And, you know, with vegetarians, it comes from, you know, legumes and beans and tofu and,
mm-hmm.
you know, just a lot of things.
Sure.
You know, a lot of things. And you have to kind of sometimes watch you don't get too much protein. And so, you know, I started, you know, getting more into that. And, you know, my wife would cook things. I just became more aware of, you know, what to order at restaurants and what to shop for at stores. And now there's so many different stores, you know, that have all this stuff. You don't, you know, there's like no, most stores, grocery stores carry all kinds of veggie burgers and soy tofu dogs, you know.
Sure.
And the meatless cold cuts. So you're not missing out on anything.
Right. Well, as you kind of suggested earlier, I mean, these kinds of foods have really come a long way. I think earlier on people said, well, you know, I'll give it a try, but, you know, I, you know, that's not really a dog, or that's, you know, whatever. But now, I mean, again, they've really, you know, like you say, they're much more flavorful. They're done much better. There's all kinds of seasonings. What, if you remember though, just backing up, I mean, what was the biggest struggle, you know, sort of early on when you were just making that change in the diet?
Well, I didn't really eat a lot of meat anyway, mm-hmm. because I'd moved out to Hollywood and meat was really expensive. And so I didn't eat that much red meat.
Yeah.
I would have like chicken and tuna fish, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and fish. And the last thing I really held on to was salmon, because that was really good. And
yeah.
And
that was the last to go, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, and now they have the different products like called Tuno, and things that it's like a fake tuna fish.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be hard pressed to tell the difference between the two.
Yeah. And what would you say, beyond just obviously the philosophical sense that kind of drove this to begin, I mean, what would you say the biggest plus, the biggest virtue, I mean, of having embraced a vegetarian diet?
Well, aside from the cruelty,
mm-hmm.
I feel so much better, you know,
yeah.
I'm not heavy, you know, I've seen how many calories are in meat compared to vegetarian products, you know.
Sure.
And I mean, if you're overweight, I mean, that's a good thing to cut down on first,
mm-hmm.
lose some weight. I feel, you know, I sleep better. I have more energy.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel good about myself.
Sure.
It's funny, you know, whenever I fly a lot. When I'm on a plane, I always get a vegetarian meal, and invariably everybody around me will look at it. And kind of, I could tell they're envious,
mm-hmm.
because they'll ask the flight attendant, they'll say, what does he have? Can I get that? You know?
That's great. Well, that kind of raises another question. I mean, what, at this point, all these years later, is there still some challenges? Like, you know, you do travel, as you say, you're on the road, you're in different cities, sometimes unfamiliar cities, different meal times maybe based on shows and traveling. I mean, is that difficult at times, or do you just so have it down that's really not, doesn't really faze you, or...
No, it doesn't really faze me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, oh, man, I can't get anything. I wish I could have that hamburger.
Cause yeah.
I don't really have that desire anymore.
Sure.
You know? It's a gradual thing, you know, and I know people that try to get into vegetarianism and they'll fall off the wagon after a while, but then they get back on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a different path for everybody. And I don't push it on anybody. It's my choice. It's
sure.
my personal choice for my reasons. And I'm impressed when someone else follows that route, but I don't, you know, I can sit down with somebody and they could eat a big steak and it doesn't, you know, I don't get all upset.
Sure, much more of a kind of each to their own view,
yeah.
It sounds like.
And if they ask me, I'll tell them. You know, and a lot of, it's amazing how many people become veggie after you know, a brief conversation or asking or seeing the way I eat, you know, and in this day and age with, you know, people being health conscious.
Yeah, it's not that big of a leap, you know, relatively speaking, I guess.
No, it's not.
So Kevin, so let me just back up a little bit to get involved with the case that PETA kind of asked you to do. Was that sort of, would you say that was kind of the first kind of active role that you played relative to an animal organization, or?
Yes, that was definitely the first one.
Yeah, and then what else would you say you're still, are you still, I mean, would you even, you know, consider yourself an animal rights activist at this point, or just kind of depending on what's going on or a certain case that maybe particularly interests you, or?
Well, I never considered myself an animal rights activist.
Okay.
You know, I just considered myself someone who had the opportunity to speak out against, you know, something that was cruel or unfair.
Mm-hmm.
And they sought me out to help, you know, with their different causes, and
sure.
You know, I believed in it, so I did it. It's not like I'm, you know, standing on a soapbox somewhere.
Right.
You know, and making my life, centering my life around that.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm probably not as active right now as I was in the, you know, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But I've kind of...
But that is that just because you have spending your time in other ways, or just because you see some shifts kind of in the situations that you were kind of more vocal about earlier? Or?
Well, I think it's a few different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I lived in New York City at the time because I was doing Saturday Night Live.
Sure.
And that's more of a... More people seem to be involved in, you know, activism there than in Los Angeles.
Hmm, okay.
And more people were coming through New York that were kind of spearheading different, you know, protests or
sure.
whatever, you know.
So it was kind of a more natural fit,
yeah.
It sounds like. Yeah,
yeah. And also, you know, the thing, when you're doing so much of this, and I've seen this with a lot of people, you get burnt out after a while. You
mm-hmm.
know, you just... You know, you put so much into it, and you know, you get a lot of flack, which is fine. But you know, and then it gets to a point where you have so many people asking you to do stuff,
yeah,
and you just can't do it all.
Sure.
You know? And then you just kind of shut down after a while. You kind of
need to recharge. Yeah, yeah.
And then you kind of start getting back into it again.
Yeah.
But you know, people are so compassionate about their causes, and there's so many different ones. You know, there's different. Everybody's out there, whether it's you know. to stop, cruelty in the slaughterhouses or
sure.
to, you know, animal shelters, you know, cruelty-free cosmetics. And when people know that you're out there and, you know, and you're a supporter, they'll just inundate you with requests. And
yeah.
then you feel bad if you can't do them, and you just can't do them all. And then you try to, and then you get burnt out.
Right,
you know?
Right. And then you're not doing anybody any good. Yeah.
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 So these days I've kind of been more involved with helping out in the local animal shelters and, you know, helping them with fundraisers. And
well, let's talk a little bit about those. What are some shelters or organizations that you know, are particularly... Yeah, important to you or near and dear to your heart these
well,
days?
Well, there's no one in particular one that's
okay.
important to me. I mean, I think the people that run the animal shelters have a really hard job, you know,
yeah.
especially when it comes to euthanizing.
Sure.
And I think a lot of the population doesn't really know how many animals are euthanized every year, and I don't think there is a set number, but there's millions and millions, you know,
yeah.
that are euthanized just for the crime of not having their own home, you know.
Sure.
I mean, I think there's like 70 million stray dogs and cats that live in the U.S., something like that, you know?
Wow, yeah.
And 8 to 12 million of those animals enter shelters every year.
Sure.
It's just every year, 12 million. And then about 5 to 9 million are euthanized.
Mm.
So,
Well, I guess among other things, and that sort of just once again raises the importance of spay and neuter programs.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of that, and I use those stamps. You know, you've seen those stamps,
mm-hmm.
spay and neuter ones, and also I try to educate people about the importance of if you want an animal, if you want a companion animal like a cat or a dog, go
mm-hmm.
to the shelter.
Yeah,
because those animals are just as good, if not better, than the kind you get from a you know a pet store or a breeder. You know?
Oh, yeah. And I think at this point, I've got a guess that your view on that would be, you know, you should really never be buying, you know, an animal from those sources when you, as you say, there's you know, dozens, hundreds, millions of dogs and cats that, you know, looking you right in the eye and ready to come home.
So, right. And it's one of those things about euthanizing that there is, you know, there's these no-kill shelters, which are good, but, you know, they can't take in that many animals.
Right.
And then the euthanizing things is just something that there is no alternative to right now because there's so much procreation going on with it, you know, these stray dogs and people don't get their dogs spayed and neutered.
Yeah.
So I think there's some people that are really doing some good work in that field and trying to come up with bills and, you know, maybe, I don't know if you've heard about this, but I think if you don't get your dog spayed or cat spayed and neutered, your license costs you more, you know, for your dog.
Oh, I didn't know that, but that seems like a really good policy to me, at least. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, anything that encourages that, I think, is probably, you know, valuable.
Absolutely. And there's a woman named Tracy, Terry Austin, who works with Amanda Foundation. She's running that.
Okay.
And she's kind of gotten to a lot of that work. And I've been doing a lot of work, fundraisers for the Amanda Foundation in Los Angeles, and I really like that organization, too.
Great. Do you happen to know their website by any chance, Kevin?
Or it's probably the Amanda Foundation.
.org or something? Okay, we'll find that out, and we'll be sure to mention that when the show airs for sure, just to get people to check that out further.
Yeah, but there's so many shelters out there, so many people that are doing good work.
Oh, of course.
That's just one of the ones I've been, you know, involved with.
Absolutely. And
oh, and by the way, you know, when you get your dog spayed or neutered, a lot of guys don't like that idea, you know, but it's much healthier for the dog, too.
Yeah.
And they tend to live longer and less of a chance of getting cancer.
Absolutely. I mean, the pluses are just endless, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
And am I right in thinking that also kind of another important organization to you in terms of a sort of different kind of animal world of animals is the Farm Sanctuary?
Yes, the Farm Sanctuary is another great organization. And like I said, there's a lot of good ones out there.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I mean, that's
Farm Sanctuary is in upstate New York, and then they're also in. Sorry about that.
No problem.
That's an animal group.
Sure.
For my support.
Right. Yeah. Seems you can volunteer this weekend. Yeah.
Farm Sanctuary. Dean and Lori. Boston up there. They're just, they really do good work, and they've opened up another one in California a couple years ago. And
mm-hmm.
they rescue downed animals from slaughterhouses, basically.
Yeah.
And, and they just let them live out the rest of their life on their sanctuary, and it's so invigorating to go up there and spend some time, you know, and kind of see what they've done.
Yeah.
And we've even, you can adopt animals up there, and they send you pictures, and it's really a fun little program.
Yeah, in fact, I think I understood that you had adopted some folks, some animals living at Farm Sanctuary.
Yeah, goats and geese. Great gift to give to somebody, too, you know. You send them a little picture of the dog.
Sure.
The goat or the cow. I had a calf up there for a while named Cat, you know.
And you can visit them. I mean, if you get out to the sanctuary, you can actually visit your adopted animals. Is that?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
Right.
Great. All right, Kevin, well, just a few other questions. We're sort of just nearing the end of our time, but sort of just some more general kind of things. I mean, how many do you have kind of animals living with you currently, or?
Nothing. There might be some rats in the walls.
I see.
But that's about it.
Okay, nothing official, nothing
no,
sanctioned.
I'm dying to get a dog.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I just travel so much.
Right, it's kind of hard.
And I really wouldn't be able to give him the quality of life that he deserved.
Sure.
But I plan on not traveling too much in the future, and I'd love to get a dog or two or three.
Oh, cool. Does that mean that there might be some specific kind of project or two in the works that you could talk about now, or just generally you're just going to make those kind of changes anyway?
General, yeah. I'm going to try to get off the road from working stand-up comedy so much and try to get into more into films and stuff.
Sure.
Actually, I have a film coming out October 9th with Molly Shannon.
Good Boy?
Good Boy, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it sounds like that's going to be really fun.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a fun. It'll be a fun movie.
And speaking of some of your other on-screen work, I don't know if this has already become a bit hackneyed, but anyone with even a passing familiarity with the Hans and Franz world must, I think, ask you about your views of Arnold Schwarzenegger running for governor.
Well, let me tell you something about Arnold. He is the perfect embodiment of a politician.
you know, and you have questions about, you know, his policy on environment or, you know, on education, then I suggest you watch A Kindergarten Cop.
Right, because you're not going to get any straight answers otherwise,
that's
apparently.
Right.
Yeah.
I think he's. I think it's entertaining that he's running.
Yeah, well, it's. But again, the entertainment may continue on through Election Day and beyond. If he, I think he may. So far, if he just doesn't answer any more questions and rides on his popularity, he may just wind up governor. You know.
Hey, well, you know, Jesse Ventura did it.
Yeah. Well, sadly, I think this is a similar situation. But anyways, all right. Well, meanwhile, while you have not scaled back on your stand-up dates, you are doing various things, and people can consult kevinnealon.com to see if you're coming to a club or theater near them. And anything else, just a sort of final comment or parting shot, animal-wise or otherwise, Kevin?
Not much. Just, you know, if you see a stray dog out on the street there, see if you can get him off the street and get him to a shelter or find him a home first, you know.
Sure.
And if you're going to adopt or if you want a dog, check with the shelters first, and you'd be surprised at all the loving cats and dogs they have down there that are great, great companion animals.
Yeah, always should adopt, right?
Yeah, I mean, don't ever buy a pet from a pet store, you know, within the cages. Those all come from puppy mills, and a lot of them aren't healthy, and they don't last that long. So we have to try to, discourage puppy mills from breeding like that.
And again, just go and to your local shelter and adopt whenever you can. So
And it's not a sad thing going in there either, you know. It's just, you'll find the right dog, you'll feel it, you know, it'll feel right.
And those animals, I know people say this, and if you don't get it, you think it's just a bit kind of little, kooky sort of talk. But really, I mean, those animals, especially when you find the right one and you adopt them, I mean, there is some sort of extra recognition, I believe, and whether it's a cat or a dog, and the fact that you chose them, you've adopted them, you've taken them from the shelter, I just think there's something extra about that connection that
there
happens.
There is. There seems to be an extra bond there, you've saved them.
Yeah, and they really somehow seem to understand that. So
All
the more reason to do it.
Exactly.
So. All right, Kevin Nealon, thank you so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
Okay, and Duncan, nice talking to you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Absolutely. We'll speak to you soon.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. All right, that was Kevin Nealon joining us today on Talking Animals, and perhaps needless to say, relative to the Schwarzenegger comments, this was recorded few days, prior to the latest poll results. But at any rate, any further information about Kevin or where he might be performing locally or otherwise, you can go to kevinnealon.com. And also at this point, I want to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. This is Duncan Strauss. It's 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. And now it's time to proceed to something else that's fun. Name That Animal Tune. And this is, of course, remarkably like any other version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related, usually just by virtue of one or more of the animals being part of the song title, but occasionally it's a bit more indirect than that. Either way, like any version of this game, we can only provide a brief snippet of the tune in question for a number of reasons, not least that while the game hinges on a song being somewhat recognizable, we also don't want to stray too far for too long from the KUCI music policy. So with that preamble behind us, but also knowing there will always be a prize. Did he say prize? Yes, he did. For the first caller who correctly identifies the song and the artist, as soon as you recognize this animal tune, please call us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. All right, let's get started. It's Talking Animals on KUCI. All right. Anybody know it? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So while we are seeing if anybody might be able to name that animal tune, since we are also approaching the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals, want to again remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show throughout the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the UC Board of Regents.
I want to thank our guest, Kevin Nealon, who joined us today, obviously. And again, any further information on what he's up to and what's going on with him, it can be obtained at kevinnealon.com. And there's other online things, too, that deal more with some of his interest in animals and his concerns for their welfare and vegetarian diets, etc. I want to thank you all for listening, and I want to appreciate those who thought about calling in. And again, you know, very very limited on those days where we're without the internet stream, but I want to thank everyone who was listening today nonetheless. And I hope you'll join me again on Talking Animals. I'll be out of town next Monday, and therefore there won't be an edition of Talking Animals, and that's Labor Day, of course. But Serena Sharp has graciously agreed to fill in, enabling her to do a special two-hour version of the Serena Sharp Show. And then I'll be back with a brand new edition of Talking Animals on Monday, September 8th at 9 a.m. I hope you'll join us then. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include Just Today Alone, The Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 4 p.m. it's Jock Talk with Omar, followed at 5 p.m. by Counterspin. Then at 5:30, Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday. There's great public affairs programming like that virtually each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning. Then again at from 4 to 5 and 5 to 6 in the afternoon. So I'd like to urge you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, topics we should cover, ideas that need to be explored, animal-related songs, comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along to us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease. And as always, we're going to close things out with an animal-related tune. This is the Starlight Mints. And we'll be hearing a thing called Black Cat. This is also 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. We recommend you catch the Blues Disease with Jeff Scott, which starts momentarily here on KUCI. And we'll catch you next time on Talking Animals. Starlight Mints now with Black Cat. See you next time.